Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Nancy Ryan, Ryan Rocks It Asbury Park Style. Another Thursday evening, and here we are again. Oh, my Lord, I've been doing this for a long time, and it is beautiful out there today. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce my very special guest this evening. And, you know, everything happens for a reason. Years ago, I never knew that I would be speaking with Cynthia Caris Alonso. She is an iconic photographer and author and a Cuba consultant as well. And she's been in so many awesome, awesome magazines that you're all familiar with. New York Times, Vanity Fair, Newsweek, Business Week, there's too many. They're all in my promotion, and she can tell you about it. You know, I want my guests to share their stories. But first, we have to do just that one little question that I always ask. I used to ask five, but now that I only do 45 minutes instead of an hour, I only ask one. So, Cynthia, welcome to the show. It's so nice to have you.
Thank you so much, Nancy. It's great to be with you.
Yes, I really enjoyed seeing you at Langusta Lounge doing your talk and doing your video, your whole, like, it was just wonderful, the whole tour of Cuba and the restaurants. But the question I want to ask you is, who influenced you the most while growing up and why? And it could have to do with anything.
Well, that's such a good question. And honestly, so many people influenced me growing up. Of course, my family, my teachers, my friends, and my parents in particular. I think I'm a real combination of both my mom and my dad. But in thinking about this, my grandmother Sylvia really influenced me most. And that's because she was such a vivacious and optimistic person who really showed me that and taught me that it's so important to stay optimistic, to stay adventurous, to travel and meet other people and share and learn about other cultures, and to actually document with photography. She traveled the world and photographed all over, and she even worked for a photographer in the 1940s and 50s and 60s in New Jersey, and she was a rep for studio photographers, and I spent a lot of wonderful time with her when she was with us, and she really inspired me to do what I've been doing in Cuba. In fact, I even have a photo of her in Cuba in 1961. She loved to go to Cuba, and as did my other grandmother, and they loved going to Cuba when it was sort of a playground for Americans to go. They went for $25 for a weekend, and it included a show.
Wow.
And, of course, now it costs a little bit more to go to Cuba, but it is still possible for Americans to go. As you mentioned, I've been photographing and writing about Cuba since 1992 for various magazine publications. And, in fact, I've done a lot of photography of musicians. My work in Cuba started with a musician photography assignment, and I've done a couple books about Cuba, Passage to Cuba, which shows more of my photojournalism in Cuba for magazines, as you mentioned, like Newsweek and Business Week, and I documented historic moments in Cuba during the 1990s, and I also photographed lots of musicians for their CD cover art back when we bought CDs. And my most recent book, A Taste of Cuba, is a trip to Cuba through the neighborhoods. Each chapter is a different neighborhood with my photos and the history of the neighborhood with recipes from the top chefs in those neighborhoods. There's really a culinary movement happening in Cuba right now through the paladars, which are private restaurants in people's homes. And my book, A Taste of Cuba, shares some of the recipes from these top chefs, as well as kind of a virtual travel book through the neighborhoods of Cuba. So that was a long answer to your question, but I do have to say that my grandmother, Sylvia, inspired me from a young age and is still with me, inspiring me with everything I'm doing with Cuba.
Right. Well, we do have that in common because I can say actually both of my grandmothers really inspired me too. But I want to say that I really enjoyed meeting you at Langusta Lounge, one of my favorite, one of my favorite restaurants on the boardwalk in Asbury Park. Meeting you there and having my own signed copy of your book, which is in my kitchen in a safe place under a cabinet so it won't get dusty and turned in a way where the pages won't get dusty. And I looked through it, and it's a wonderful, wonderful book.
Well, thank you,
know, you
so much. I was so happy that you were able to come.
Yeah, well, Beverly invited me kind of like at the last minute. She invited me to the first one that you did, and I couldn't make that. But then the second time she said, you've got to stop by. And so I really didn't think to come right at 6. I didn't know exactly what the format was going to be. And then when I got there at 6:30, I thought, oh, darn, I missed like a whole half an hour of this because you were so interesting. And like really, I did actually take photographs of the Cuba flag and the American flag, and I put that in the promo. And then I took another photograph of one of the gardens that was so beautiful. But I loved the book, and I was looking through the book at the recipes and the different caladars, as you say, that are so, like, inviting, because, like, it is like
right. You're
going into someone's home, and it's just the ambiance, too, not just the food. And I have always, I'll tell you, my father, I'm one of lots of children, the oldest of 7. My dad used to say this to me, Nancy, if I could get all you kids to eat rice every day, I'd be a millionaire. Because I would come home from school every day and I would make rice and I would eat it with just butter and salt and pepper. I like till this day love. Now I have to tell you, last night what I had for dinner, I had white rice that I put in my rice cooker. And I like brown rice too. I like eat all kinds of rice, Spanish rice, white rice, all kinds of rice, basmati, any kind you can imagine I eat. So I made rice, and then, of course, I had to have black beans on top, and then I put salsa on top of that, and then I put 3 or 4 different cheeses shredded on top of that with some garlic.
Well, that sounds like an interesting mixture. I have to tell you that in making this book, I really discovered, and I worked with my co-author, Valerie Feigen, who is my lifelong friend since childhood,
mm-hmm.
and she helped me translate all the recipes that I got from Cuba, because when I first started the project, I'm a photographer, and I was doing all the photography, and I was collecting the recipes from Cuba's top chefs, and my friend Valerie said, you know, you have to test all these recipes before you can share them with the public and publish them. And I said, oh, no, how will I do that? I'm a photographer. So she said, well, give me a few, I'll try them. And she tried a few, and she said, well, that was fun and delicious, give me some more. And so after a while, she said, you know, I'd like to be your test kitchen. So I'm so grateful to Valerie for not only being my test kitchen, but she was the first to realize when I was collecting these recipes that mm-hmm. Cuba's culinary cuisine right now is not just rice and beans. It's so much more.
Oh,
and
I know. I'm aware.
And so my book, A Taste of Cuba, really captures a lot of what's happening in this culinary movement, because there are paladars, which are private restaurants in people's homes. And one of the biggest changes I've seen in documenting Cuba for 26 years is the development of private business in Cuba, and in particular, the paladars, which comes from the word palate. And what started mm-hmm. out in the mid-90s as a few families getting together and petitioning the government to open up a private restaurant in their home, including Enrique and Odie from La Guarida. Some of your listeners may have traveled to Cuba and eaten at La Guarida and La Cocina de Lilium, because Lilium is a wonderful cook. These are some of the first paladars in the mid-90s. And what started out with just a handful of families petitioning the government, there are now more than 2,000 paladars all across the country. And so I've seen this development. I've seen the increase of paladars grow, and I thought, this really should be documented. This needs to be a book. And when I went to the different chefs to collect their recipes, they said, oh, some of these, you know, my recipe's never been written down before. It was from their grandmother.
Right.
It was out of their,
mm-hmm.
it was from their head. And so part of the joy of making this book was actually publishing what some of these recipes that have just been passed down from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
And not only are the recipes so delicious, because they pretty much what they're doing is they're starting with classic Cuban dishes that some of your audience might have heard of, like ropa vieja and arroz con pollo and tres leches. And they're starting with these traditional classic Cuban dishes, but a lot of
mm-hmm.
the paladars are putting their own little spin on it. And so some of the recipes in
right.
our book are the classic recipes, and some of them have a little twist because of the Cuban inspiration
mm-hmm.
or the influences from other countries. Some of the chefs are studying
right.
in France, and like at Atelier, one of my favorite paladars in Havana, the chef studied at the Paul Bocuse School in France, and he came back and he put some of a French influence on a lot of the dishes, like the duck l'orange,
mm-hmm.
which I love, and some of the other foods. The malanga fritters are a classic there. And what I wanted to do in this book is not only share the Cuban culture and the spirit of the people and the history of the different neighborhoods and the architecture and the color in so many ways of the
yeah.
neighborhoods and the buildings and the people and the culture, but I also wanted to share some of my favorite paladars, not just because the food is fantastic, but also because the experience while you're there is so wonderful. And so I also show in each chapter photos of the paladar, the history of the paladar and the owners, and then I share their recipes. And today, even,
mm-hmm.
you might cook some of these dishes, and you might go to Cuba, and some of the dishes are either not on the menu anymore or the ingredients have changed, because Cuba is constantly in flux, and the chefs and the owners of these paladars are always having to change what they're making available on their menu and what they're actually cooking by the ingredients that they have available to them. So it's really quite interesting, not only traveling through Cuba and experiencing these wonderful places, but we wanted to bring Cuba to your American kitchen. And so we've translated these recipes not only from Spanish to English and metric to imperial, but there are also some fabulous instructions in the original recipes that I got from the chefs, such as Carlos from San Cristobal, where Obama dined. He told me, well, then you put a coffee cup size of olive oil in. And we thought, what's a coffee cup size? And my friend Valerie, the test kitchen, she started with an American coffee cup, and she ended up having to completely throw out the dish because it turns out it was an espresso cup. So the way that Cubans cook is much more by what's available to them, and also they define their quantities by what they have available to them. So
right.
it's
but
they're delicious foods, and I really encourage all your readers to get a taste of Cuba and try some of the recipes in your
mm-hmm.
American kitchen, which we've translated the recipes so that you can cook them here, because not only did we have to translate, but a lot of the ingredients are different here than they are in Cuba. For example, our flour and sugar have a different consistency and taste than they do actually in Cuba. And some of the foods are not available from Cuba that are here, and we've suggested substitutes in that case. But the recipes are ready to cook in American kitchens. And as you look through the book, hopefully you'll also have sort of a virtual trip to Cuba through my photographs of the neighborhoods and the paladars and the food.
Thank you.
It is possible for Americans to still travel there. There's a lot of confusion right now about whether Americans can go, but actually they really can. It's still legal as of today. In fact, it's easier for Americans to go now than even when the normalizing of relations between the two countries began, because what our current administration did was create a new category of travel called support for the Cuban people. And everything you do when you're going there, whether you take a private taxi or eat in a private paladar or stay in somebody's home that you found on Airbnb, these are all supporting the Cuban people. And so by checking that category, any of your listeners can just call up an airline, make flight plans, and plan a trip to Cuba. And things might be changing. There was recently an announcement by the current administration and Bolton announcing that regulations will be changing. They have not gone into effect yet, but they will be honoring any trips that are planned before the changes go into place. So if anybody, any of your listeners want to go to Cuba, now's the time to book your trip.
Right.
And I also hope that your listeners will visit the paladars that are in my book, because these are such wonderful places, both, again, for the experience and for the food.
Right. Okay, my question to you is this. Do you have any ancestors or, you know, people in your family that were from Cuba, or why, you know, was Cuba so important to you? And, well, first of all, I want to interject something. I moved to Weehawken, New Jersey in 1971. And in 1971, even before that, for years, the government, the U.S. government, were giving people from Cuba, they were helping people from Cuba to come into Union City, New Jersey. And Union City, New Jersey, by the time I moved up there, which was the next city over to me, like 5 minutes away, a walk away, was pretty much Bergen Line Avenue was completely owned by Cuban people. So every morning before I went to work, I would stop at this little place and I would get my espresso coffee con leche, espresso coffee with, of course, the steamed milk and sugar. And then they would take this their bread that they baked and they would put it on a double fryer. You know, I don't know what it's called, but they would put this butter and garlic on this bread and then press it down and get it. And then
it's actually called a plancha,
like,
which means iron.
Yeah.
Where they sort of flatten the bread.
Right. They flatten the bread and then they cut it in half. So that's what I ate every single morning for like almost 8 years. During the week, I would stop at the same place and then I would go to a lot of the restaurants too. And so I did was introduced to Cuban food. But I was introduced to Cuba way before that because my cousin Danny married a Cuban girl that was a Cuban refugee, her whole family. Came during the Castro regime, and they came over here, and they were supported. They came to Miami first, then into New York City, and then the Presbyterian Church in Asbury Park set them up with an apartment in Asbury Park, and they've been here ever since. So my
right.
Hello,
well,
Myrta Hayho is my cousin's wife, and they have a huge family, and I want to call her and say we have to meet for lunch, and I'm going to show her my cookbook. Signed cookbook, and I have to get from, I want to say Beverly, you know, was so excited. Beverly went to Cuba before President Obama with a group of people to the film, to the jazz festival, and she was all talking about Cuba so much when she came back, and I was supposed to go to that on that trip and didn't, so I'm hoping to really go to Cuba. I'm talking to both of you about it, so we'll talk about
Beverly,
that. But getting back with
Beverly is the wonderful person who organized my event in Asbury Park, which was a Cuban dinner and my photo presentation. And the dinner was made from recipes in my book, A Taste of Cuba. And my presentation and my talk with photos was part of that presentation that you came to. And I do that a lot. If any of your listeners would like me to come to their town and do a presentation about Cuba with photos and even food, if possible, I'd be glad to. You can follow me on Facebook, A Taste of Cuba Book, or Cynthia Caris Alonso, and please get in touch. But you're not alone, Nancy. A lot of people love the Cuban coffee and the special Cuban breads, and there
is
and the people. There's such a long history between the two countries, America, United States, and Cuba, both in terms of travel and cultural exchange and of course, a long history of business. And I actually like to say that this is one of the only bipartisan issues in this time of divided parties in a divided country. But both Republicans and Democrats want to be able to travel to Cuba and do business with Cuba. So I do really hope that we continue the cultural exchange and that we continue to normalize relations between the two countries, because we have, as Obama said, and I did cover his trip to Cuba, and as he said to a room full of entrepreneurs and private business people, we have so much to learn from each other in terms of the two countries and the American and Cuban people. And it's so true. We're so close. Cuba's just 90 miles south of U.S. shores, and yet there are some similarities and there are some differences. I mean, one huge similarity is that we share a love and national sport of baseball. You can also, as you mentioned, there are so many families here that have family in Cuba and family here. And if you're traveling in Cuba, they love Americans. People say, oh, well, you know, our governments have such issues with each other. Do they welcome American travelers and American people? And absolutely, they love Americans. They welcome American travelers to Cuba. And everybody will say, oh, I love the Yankees, or I love baseball. And they everybody's wearing, you know, Yankees hats or New York hats. They welcome the cultural exchange. But so many people will also say, oh, I've got an uncle in Chicago. I've got a cousin in New Jersey. So many families have been divided by the fraught politics of the two countries. As you asked, yes, I do actually have some interesting family history with Cuba. So on my with my immediate family, I'm actually married to a Cuban man, Jose Luis Alonso, and he first inspired me to document Cuban culture and Cuban people and photograph what was going on, starting in 1992 when the Soviets first pulled their support from Cuba, and Cuba went into a special period because almost overnight they lost their sugar daddy. Literally, Russia was a sugar daddy to Cuba. They bought sugar at higher than market value, and the extra money really supported the Cuban people. They had food. They had materials and resources, medical resources, educational resources, and a lot of that, since the loss of the support from the Soviet Union, has been lacking. And because the U.S. embargo has continued, it has to be an act of Congress, actually, to end the embargo. So the embargo is still in place, but by executive order, President Obama was able to begin a process of normalizing relations to allow travel and business between the two countries. And so Americans can travel back and forth. And I originally went as a journalist in 1992 and to photograph Cuban musicians. And there's so much incredible music. You're probably familiar with Buena Vista Social Club and fabulous jazz pianists like Chucho Valdez and Trova, Pablo Milanes or Silvio Rodriguez, or fantastic salsa like Bambaleo and Los Van Van. And nowadays there's Zona de la Gente.
There's a restaurant on the boardwalk in Asbury Park. I think it's still there. I'm going to have to double check, though. Don't take it, you know, as, you know, written in the stones, but it's called Cubicon. And I learned how to salsa dance there. But
well, there's so much fabulous music. And just walking around the streets in Cuba, you hear so much music because there's so many wonderful musicians. Almost every family has a musician or a singer or an artist of some kind. And, of course, it's a country which really celebrates the arts and music, and so that's part of what makes Cuba so special when you visit, and the Cuban musicians are so fantastic and so talented. But in any case, I married a Cuban, and I got to know his family, and they are still in Cuba, and I get to visit them when I go back and forth.
Did you meet him in Cuba?
We met in Cuba when Actually, I'll tell you, it's a cute story. When I first went to Cuba,
I'm looking
it was
for
to
a
photograph.
Husband. Maybe I should go. I'm looking for a husband. Maybe I should go to Cuba.
Oh, well, you know,
Cuba is a very passionate
place. There's a lot of love from the people of, you know, it's a very romantic and passionate
really
culture.
I'm a passionate person and I'm a musician, so I got to throw something out there. Everybody, okay, you have to get Cynthia's books, first of all. Get both A Passage to Cuba, which I'm going to go to Barnes & Noble and get, hopefully, tomorrow, and the cookbook.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I'll tell you why.
Well, A Taste of Cuba is...
Now,
so my new book, A Taste of Cuba, is a journey through Cuba.
You're doing another book in addition
no,
to
No, my current
Cuba?
Book is called A Taste of Cuba. If you go on Amazon, there's more
yeah,
than
I know
one.
That.
So mine is actually A Taste of Cuba, A Journey Through Cuba and Its Cuisine, Its Culture and Its Cuisine.
Cool. Okay, cool. All right, this is it. What I like the most, too, is that all of the vegetables that are grown without pesticides. They are grown in absolutely fantastic soil. And so you
right.
know that you're getting, like, the best of the best ingredients in your food. And that's really important to me because I am, like, don't believe in chemicals or I don't believe in spraying. I'm so anti that. Like, I am just a green
right.
person.
Well,
so,
well, because of the special period, when Cuba lost the support of Russia, they actually went organic by default. They lost the supply of pesticides and fertilizer, and they became organic by default, and now they realize that it's much healthier to be organic. So everything in Cuba is absolutely farm to table.
Right.
It's not always so easy to get your ingredients or your food. So I've got a few stories that I've been wanting to share. One with your audience. One has had an experience I had, and this is sort of reflects how difficult it is to get ingredients in Cuba. So when I started working on this book, A Taste of Cuba, I had a mixed green salad in one of the paladars, again, a private restaurant in somebody's home. And I said to the chef, how is it possible that we have a mixed green salad in my more than 20 years of traveling to Cuba, there's only been one kind of lettuce. And you have a mixed green salad. And the chef said
right.
to me, I'll tell you my secret. I have a friend in Spain who sends me the seeds. I have another
right,
friend in Cuba. I have another friend in Cuba who owns a farm mm-hmm. and grows the different greens. I have another friend who has a truck and brings the greens to my restaurant. And that's how you get
right.
a mixed green salad in mm-hmm. Cuba. So every paladar owner and chef has to have a connection to the ingredients and to a
right.
private garden that's growing
right.
the ingredients. But everything is real farm to table, and everything is fresh and delicious. You do have to know where to go and where to eat, and that's why I did A Taste of Cuba cookbook, because
right.
I wanted to share some of the places where I think you can get the best food. It's not mm-hmm. very cheap. It's not just rice and beans, as we said. It's they're more elaborate dishes, and but they're just delicious, and the paladars in my book are some of the best places to go if you're going to Cuba. And if you can't make the trip right now, we brought Cuba to your kitchen through our book and our
right.
recipes.
And what about the flan? The flan or flan, however you pronounce it, is that still a very popular dessert in Cuba?
The flan is of Spanish influence, and yes, it's delicious. We have the recipe from...
Yeah, I've been eating it for years, since 71.
Yes, well,
I love it.
we have the classic recipe, which is made at the organic farm in the western part of the country called Pinar del Rio, and at Paradiso, the organic farm in Pinar del Rio, they make this flan. They also have an anti-stress drink. Who doesn't need an anti-stress drink? We've got that recipe
right.
in the book, and it's made with
yeah.
different herbs. What because of the lack of medical supplies,
mm-hmm.
all Cubans are very well versed in how to use food and herbs medicinally. And so people know that if you have a stomach ache, you should eat mint and some of these herbs.
Right.
And
that's
if you have leg cramps, cinnamon helps with leg cramps. And so there's a lot of homeopathic care and preventive care in terms of medical issues in Cuba as well. But I wanted to tell you, I wanted to tell you how I met my husband, because it was in 1992, and as I mentioned, it was right after Russia pulled its support from Cuba, and I went to photograph three musical groups for a German record company. But for very Cuban reasons, when I got there, I couldn't photograph any of the musicians. It was the height of the special period, and there was very little gas. And so one group didn't have gasoline to get together for a photo shoot from different parts of the country. Another group didn't have telephones. They never really developed the landline situation, and this was before cell phones. Now so many Cubans actually have cell phones, or as they call them, mobile phones. And Wi-Fi is growing and becoming more accessible in Cuba. But back then, they didn't have phones to let them know that we were coming for the photo shoot. And another group had lost their guitarist, who had defected in Mexico on their last tour to Mexico. So they didn't have the guitarist for the photo shoot. So for all these very Cuban reasons, I couldn't photograph any of the musicians. Well, here I was with two cameras. Back then, it was actual film, not digital. And I had one camera with black and white film and one camera with color film. And I was staying in the home of a musician, which was actually illegal at the time. But I was so thankful that one of the musicians invited me to stay with his family, because when you travel to a place, if you really want to get to know a culture and people, it's so wonderful to be able to stay with people who actually live there. So I was staying with a musician. I woke up at dawn with the roosters. There are roosters in Havana, even though it's a big city. And I went out into the streets to do my own photography. And it happens to be one of the safest places to in the world. In fact, it's just been rated by TripAdvisor as the safest place to visit. You can walk around as even a single woman at night. Any time of the day or night, any street in Havana is very safe, especially for a foreigner. And so even though it was safe, some guy tried to flirt with me and talk to me, and I wasn't really interested. And so I told him my husband was in the military, and he ran. But I thought, well, maybe I should find the record producers who were in Miramar, a different neighborhood from where I was. And I ended up, I was standing on a corner, a famous corner, with beautiful ceiba trees. Ceiba trees are trees where the roots grow out of the ground, and they're very majestic and beautiful, and they're spiritual trees. Actually, the slaves that were brought over from what was Yoruba in Africa, and now is Nigeria, the slaves brought the seeds to these trees over to Cuba with them and planted them. And they're beautiful trees. So I'm standing on this corner under a bunch of ceiba trees, and I asked a guy for directions to the bus to find. Back then, there was a paper shortage. There was no tourism yet. There were no guidebooks. I had no clue where I was. So I asked a guy for directions. And that guy has been my husband for 26 years.
Oh, yeah, that's really a great story. That's a great story.
So, anyway, anything can happen in Cuba. It's sort of a place that's really full of the Cuban spirit, which is so special. In spite of the dire circumstances that people still live with, it's still hard to find food. It's still hard to get medical supplies. You know, possibly because of the embargo, possibly because of other issues. But in any case, Cubans are still struggling. And yet, in spite of the struggles that they have for basic needs that, you know, we take for granted here, it can be a struggle for meat. My stepson, Lancelo Alonso, who just opened up an art gallery in Vedado, Alonso Taller, he sometimes has to decide. He's a painter, and he sometimes has to decide, is he going to buy paint or is he going to buy meat for dinner? But in any case, despite the struggles that so many Cubans are experiencing, they're really celebrating life, and they're appreciating every moment, and they're appreciating what they have. And what they have is a lot of love, a lot of family and community, education, one of the highest literacy rates in the world, and art. And I really believe that these values that they really all share, you know, about education, art, family, community, and of course food, I think that these values are helping them really celebrate and enjoy life. And that's something we can learn from Cubans.
Yeah.
And that's partly why I keep going back. I'm so drawn to this Cuban spirit of enjoying life and going through life with positivism.
Right. I understand completely because Latin, I was involved with for many years, a lot of Mexican. I have a lot of Mexican friends that came from Mexico, and I worked with them and partied with them, and they would be sending money back to Mexico to help their family. And they had the same ethic of no matter how bad things could be, their spirit and their zest and passion for life, family, eating, music, it's really, we need it in America. Americans need it, more of it, definitely. Because I lived in California, 15 minutes from Tijuana for 28 years, and there is a difference. There's a definite difference in the cultures. And I watched, just perchance, I bought a bunch of documentaries from the library. They became available where I go. It's around the corner from me. I bought 100 documentaries. One of them was called Welcome to Havana. Beverly, if you're listening, honey, I need to get that back from you. I have a few people I want to watch it, but after I watched it, and I think I shared this with you privately, after I watched that documentary about Havana and Cuba, I really wanted to get on a plane and just move there. Sorry, United States.
Well,
no,
you know, Cuba,
I love it.
Cuba has always had a really special culture and people and celebration of art and music, decades. You know, this is Cuba, and I think that the spirit of the Cuban people continues in spite of the circumstances that they're living with, and that energy and that value for their art and their artists is so special and makes traveling to Cuba so wonderful. And it's really kind of interesting. I recently interviewed former CNN journalist David Ariosto about his book, This is Cuba, which is really a great read. It's he also tells his story of living in Cuba as a journalist. Weaved in through his story is so much information about Cuba, the culture and the history. But he interviews somebody in Cuba, and it's a couple, and they're very eager to leave Cuba because they feel, as some and many Cubans do, that there's the streets are paved in gold in America, and that there's a brighter future for them with more possibilities in Cuba, in the United States. So a lot of Cubans feel that they need to leave to start a new life in the United States with more resources. He interviews them in Cuba, but then he interviews them once they finally get to Miami, and they finally get to Florida, and he interviews the woman, and he says, exactly. He says, how are you? And she says, oh, I'm tired, because all of a sudden she had phone bills and rent bills and taxes and other issues. And she says, everything here is username and password, username and password. And he says, well, what do you miss about Cuba? And she says, well, I really miss my freedom. And I thought, wow, that is very powerful. I mean, it's only recent that so many Cubans have more freedoms, freedom to travel outside the country and go home, freedom, more freedom of speech, more freedom of expression. But the history of Cuba, we know, he said, well, what do you mean you miss your freedom? And she said, I miss the freedom of time. And that is so true. There's a freedom of time in Cuba. There's a freedom to enjoy life. And some of that is really missing here in our daily lives as we all struggle with our jobs and our bills and our, everybody has struggles all over the world, including Cubans, and we have them here too, but it's so easy to get caught up in your anxieties and your struggles here in the United States and not take time to enjoy life and to celebrate what you do have, which, you know, so many of us have so much in terms of love
no
and art and community and family.
No siestas in America. But listen, I'm sorry to say that we have approached that time. The time has come where, unfortunately, I must say thank you. Well, not unfortunately. Well, I have to go because we could talk forever. And
yes, I love talking about Cuba. I hope your listeners will follow my book on Facebook at A Taste of Cuba Book.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And this interview will be promoted worldwide as the promo.
Thank you so much, Nancy. Thank you for having me share Cuba with your audience.
Oh, no, you're welcome. And with me, and I appreciate it so much. And all of my shows are also archived so that people can go and listen to the show many times if they wish and get in touch with, get in touch with Cynthia personally if you have interest in going to Cuba. They can do that, right? You're also on
Facebook.
Absolutely.
Yes, I consult people on their travel to Cuba. I help them plan their itinerary. It's really a very special place for those who can and want to go. I encourage you to go sooner rather than later because regulations may be changing. And in the meantime, if you can't get to Cuba, I hope you'll get my book, A Taste of Cuba, A Journey Through A Journey Through Cuba, Its Culture and Cuisine, because through my book, you can travel to Cuba as well as cook the dishes of some of my favorite chefs and paladar owners.
Right. Well, it's been really a pleasure having you on the show. It really has been. And you covered every single thing, that you possibly could. And I do encourage people to also get the passage to Cuba. I know I'm interested in doing that because I have your cookbook already. I have that.
Well,
gift.
Thank you so much. If you don't find it in your stores, it's possible to order both books on Amazon.
On Amazon, right. In fact, yeah. Okay, well, we'll talk too after this. But I want to say thank you very much for taking the time to come on the show. And I know you're
thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, and lots of luck in the future and planning your November escapades. And I look forward to seeing more of your work, definitely. Because
well, thank you. Thank you so much. Well,
I'm
available for Cuba consulting and photography. And Beverly and I are going to be planning a trip in November to Cuba, more of a foodie trip. So if anyone's interested, let us know.
Right. Okay, I'll be the first. I already let Beverly know that I'm interested. So we'll see what happens. So with that, I want to say good night to you, and God bless.
Thank you.
All right, folks. You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Cynthia. Bye-bye. So that was Cynthia Caris Alonso, iconic photographer, author, and Cuba consultant. And it was really nice having her on. Of course, I go way back with Beverly. I met Beverly so many years ago. I can't even think how long now it's been. It's been many, 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 many years. And I do have to go through, and I want to, and always this is part a very special part of my show that I like to promote my not-for-profits. I started my show to promote not-for-profits and to be giving back, and I encourage everyone to give up their time and their talents and whatever it is that you can give, your whatever it is, time, talents, tithe, whatever. They are Minister Steve Brigham of Kansas City, the Nelsons. They're fabulous, fabulous people. City of Angels, it's a recovery radio show. These are all, by the way, all these people have been on my radio show, and they're all on Facebook. So just go to Facebook, send a private message, and there you go. You're instantly connected. The Food Bank of Monmouth and Ocean Counties, the Rescue Mission, which is on Memorial Drive in Asbury Park, New Jersey, TruPAC, which is the Overdose Prevention Agency Corporation. And tonight I'm doing it a little bit differently. I'm not giving you each founder's name. because I left my red book in another room and didn't have time to go grab it, unfortunately. But if you go to these pages, these Facebook pages, you'll find them. Mr. Tim McClune, Holiday Express, and I will go back and give you some names. Holiday Express is awesome. I just got their whole 218th year of what they did. They just are an awesome, awesome organization, and they do so much for people that are less fortunate than some of us. Boogieing, Kicking It to the Streets, that's on my friend Nick Clemens. Hometown Heroes, and I believe that that is it for now. I'm looking to go with one more. Number 10, I had to drop someone off because they're not a 503C at the moment, but they will be again, so I'll be adding them back. And I want to say, as of just about a year and a half ago, I decided it was time for me, since I was getting into movies, doing movies other than doing some documentaries that I've done, I got my very first sponsor. Her name is Dr. Inna Soman, and this is their third dentist office, and it's called Smiles on Broadway. And she has given me a fantastic, beautiful smile so that I can continue to do some nice photographs and movies. I was just in a movie recently and been offered a few more, so I'm looking forward to doing that. My second sponsor is Dr. David Marin of the Marin Wellness Center. And it's also a fabulous place to go if you have any aches and pains anywhere and you need professionals, a professional chiropractor or a physical therapist. I highly recommend you go to them, and they're at Avenue of the Commons in Shrewsbury. And the third is my doctor, Dr. Gregory Peck. I had a serious issue years ago, and I have had to have several surgeries, and I'm not going to get into the particulars of it. I have not, had any facelifts. I know I look great for 72, but Dr. Peck is located in West Orange, New Jersey. And you can find him. He's one of the top doctors in the state of New Jersey. And his brother, Richard, is also part of his organization. And they have their own surgery center right below his office in West Orange. So that's about it. I guess I'm going to go enjoy my evening. And I hope that everyone else does the same. And it's been another great show. I really enjoy doing this, as you all know. And good night, everybody. Have a terrific time. Tomorrow's Friday, and looking forward to an outrageous weekend despite the Jersey weather. Bye-bye, everybody. God bless.